Blog Talk Radio.
All the laws and legislation in the world will never heal this world like the loving hearts and arms of mothers and fathers. You know, if every child could drift to sleep feeling wrapped in the love of their family, in God's love, this world would be a far more gentle and better place. President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans and to heal the planet. My promise is to help you and your family.
Look here. I'm talking about America.
She's here for your country. She's here for your state. She's here for your family. She's your voice against the erosion of your culture. Missouri Grassroots Radio is proud to present your culture vigilante, Miss Lisa Payne Nager. She's here for you.
Welcome to Wednesday evening. It's the 14th of November. This is your culture vigilante hour. I'm Lisa Payne Nager. Did you hear my liberty-loving Labrador during the intro there, Dave? Barking at the neighbors. Yes, that's always on cue, I guess, every week. We're rolling here. We're a week after the election. We're glad to be here with Missouri Grassroots Radio on your Culture Vigilante Hour. We got a lot of good stuff for you tonight, and we're breaking out of our post-election fog, and we're, I guess, getting our feet back on the ground and crawling back out of the depressing hole that we're in last week after the results of the election. And interesting sense, people are starting to think forward, if you want to use that term that Obama uses all the time, and we're thinking of moving forward and how we can combat the evils that are about to face us in the next 4 years of fundamentally transforming America. We have Dave Court with us tonight, in with us as usual, Dave, and taking care of business.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. And we're happy to have with us tonight, sitting in with us for not the first time. Cindy's been with us before, but we have Cindy McGee of Show Me Patriots is sitting in with us tonight, and she'll be offering some commentary and hopefully talking a little bit about Show Me Patriots as well. Hi, Cindy. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
We're glad to have you. Cindy and I are good friends, and we have gone back and forth for a very long time and commiserated over the results of the election and talked about, you know, the future and what's in store and where do we go now. And this is kind of our second week of discussing, you know, where do you go from here, because we kind of did that last week. This week I think we have a little bit more direction and a little more purpose. And so Cindy is the leader of Show Me Patriots. And Show Me Patriots is a group in Franklin County, Cindy? Yes?
Well, we really were centered more in Chesterfield and that area of St. Louis, and we have been trying to get a group going in Franklin County.
Okay. So Cindy's had that group for a couple of years, and they've been very successful in promoting events off and on and making their presence known in Jefferson City. But now with the post-election, Cindy's breathing a new breath of life into the group and resurrecting a new faction of it. So you want to tell us a little bit about Show Me Patriots, Cindy, and how it came about?
Sure. Well, after the last election 4 years ago, when many of us started to wake up to the fact that we were in serious trouble, we met, 11 of us met, and we decided that we needed to form a group to educate, motivate, and activate. And Show Me Patriots was born, and we had the help of some other patriots that brought in some great speakers to start with to help start educating people, and we did some boot camps on how to be politically active, and then Show Me Patriots was very, very much on the tip of the sword when we were fighting for Prop C, and at the time that it started, it was called the Healthcare Freedom Act, and so we worked really hard to get that legislation passed, and then we've just tried to educate the patriots and get people involved, and It's been quite a journey. It's the last week was very disappointing, of course, and frustrating, and you know, we realized after the election we need to take a new course. That we need to kind of reevaluate what we've done, where we've been, where we're going, and what we're up against. Because, quite frankly, I think that the landscape has changed after this last election.
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt. I mean, you know, we are on a bullet train to socialism, and
yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be a scary, scary ride for the next, you know, however long, at least until December, until we find out where the fiscal cliff is going, and. You know, and you and I have talked several times over the last week or so, and anybody who's kind of looked at the news, if you've kind of come out of your fog and you've started watching the news again and listening to the radio, there, you know, people are starting to talk about some various ways to just kind of combat the catastrophe that's coming our way. There are a lot of people pushing to kind of get back to basics. Which is a good thing, you know. I think there's been talk for many years about getting back to basics, strengthening states' rights, strengthening state sovereignty, promoting 10th Amendment issues. And over the last week, we've been seeing a lot of states. I don't know, Dave, if you've kind of noticed this too. You and I talked about it maybe yesterday or today. The number of states that have signed the petition for secession has kind of blossomed over in just a matter of a few days. People are mad as hell, and they don't. We've definitely got a country divided. This was not a referendum for Obama's reelection. It's pretty 50-50. You know, it was kind of a squeaker for him, and you know, now people are not happy with the course of events or the slide into socialism. I don't know how many states. Do you know, Dave? How many states have signed the petition for secession?
I believe there are petitions from 32 states. There are 44 petitions, but several states have two different versions of it up there. That's the last I remember.
Yeah.
I just heard on the news earlier that all 50 states now have petitions, and there are 695,000 signatures.
My God.
Between the various petitions.
In just a matter of a couple of days. So I don't necessarily think secession is actually the way to go. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
695,000? That's more people than voted for Gary Johnson.
Right. Where were they? No.
Yeah, no kidding. Where were they? I think secession is kind of a knee-jerk reaction. I don't think necessarily it's a good – I mean, it's a referendum, you know, and it's a statement, but secession at this point – it's kind of foolish, I think.
Go ahead. Sorry. No.
No, I was just going to say, I think that the thing about secession and what we're seeing happening is a reflection of the amount of anger, frustration, fear that a lot of Americans are feeling about the direction the country is going in, and definitely speaks to the fact that this president does not have a referendum. And I think that if secession were to be an option that were to be put on the table, it would need to have an orchestrated and, you know, organized effort behind it. You can't just have people willy-nilly signing a petition and expect to see results.
Well, you know, and this petition, I mean, think about this. Okay, so we're going to sign petitions, and, you know, you may or may not reach the number that you need for the White House to respond to it. So what's he going to do? What's Obama going to do? Say, sure, take your tax money and secede from the union. I mean, you know. I mean,
it would be so easy.
Yeah. I mean, what do you expect? I mean, it's a great way to make a statement. You know, we're mad as hell. You know, but it's kind of like a temper tantrum as far as I'm concerned. It's not really a productive way to change things. I think, you know, the push for 10th Amendment freedoms is a good idea. I think withdrawing and going, you know, pulling back into our states and pushing for states' rights and state sovereignty is the way to go. Nullification issues, yada, yada, yada. And we'll talk about those a little bit more as the evening goes on. But this whole secession thing, I'm just not so sure. Plus, you know, and I'm not a Glenn Beck guru. I listen to Glenn Beck occasionally. But, you know, he made a great point about the secession thing. You know, okay, so put your name on a White House petition, and Obama, who is the king of executive orders, you know, and with the NDAA still floating around out there, you know, your name is now on a White House petition that is, you know, they have access to, that's, you know, as, and you can be, I'm assuming, qualified as a terrorist or whatever they want to qualify you as now. They've got your name, they've got your identification, you know, as a crazy, wild radical who wants to secede from the Union, they've got all your information. I don't get it. I mean, people aren't thinking this through.
I agree.
Yes.
I think that it was, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and then...
Go ahead, Dave.
It's not any more constitutional than it was when Abraham Lincoln put it down either.
So it's not constitutional to secede from... I guess it's not constitutional to secede from the Union.
No, I mean, it's not. I mean, that was a huge debate 142 years ago, and it would be a huge debate today, but what it boils down to is, you know, the preamble of the Constitution defines the purpose of the document. It doesn't define the government. It defines the purpose of the document, and the first purpose of the document is to preserve the Union. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect Union. So preserving the Union is the first job of the federal government.
Yeah, well, you know, good luck there. Somebody forgot to tell Obama that. You know, hey, Barack, you know, you're supposed to preserve the Union. You're not supposed to drive it over the fiscal cliff. I'm not sure that's going to work so well.
I don't think he's going to listen to that.
Yeah, you know, but just about as much as he's going to allow Texas or Missouri or anybody else to secede from the Union, I'm just not thinking that's going to work so well. But there is kind of a push for the 10th Amendment, strengthening of the 10th Amendment, which, you know, if nothing else good comes from it, I think that'll come from, you know, that'll bring some strength to that
right.
issue. Kind of want to also mention today, we talked, Missouri Grassroots Coalition issued a grass fire alert today. There is, let me see if I can get it up on my computer so that I can speak a lot intelligently about it. There is, Missouri is on the verge of trying to decide whether or not we're going to jump on the bandwagon and initiate health care exchanges here, which is the mandate of Obamacare. Now, many states, and I don't really know exactly how many states, but like Louisiana and Kansas and Kentucky, I think, all, you know, have Alabama, you know, have said, okay, we are not going to initiate healthcare exchanges per Obamacare. I think also today it was reported, and if I can find the article, let's see. The governor of Missouri, our friend, what's his name?
Jay Nixon,
has also said that they are not going to initiate healthcare exchanges here in Missouri. So, you know, people are, you know, states are deciding they're going to take their chances with the federal government and defy the formation of healthcare insurances. And today, Ron Calzone issued an alert that we forwarded here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition for you to contact your senators and let them know, because they are beginning to meet in Jefferson City and set their legislative agenda for the year. And this is certainly one of the items on the agenda. About whether or not to initiate this situation here in Missouri. At last session, HB 609, the Missouri Healthcare Exchange Act, went through the legislature, and all of the citizens of Missouri voted again to not initiate healthcare exchanges per the governor in Missouri. And you are urged to contact your senators, your representatives there, to let them know that you do not support this act here in Missouri. So, and you can go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and see and get the contact information for your senators there. Give them a call, send them an email. What do you guys think about this situation?
I think that you're on the right track there, Lisa. I mean, the constitutional way to do what the secessionists are trying to do is just to do nothing more than rely on the Constitution and what it says about the sovereignty of our state and act accordingly.
So correct me if I'm wrong, and I think you and I and Tom Martz probably discussed this during the session last year. I think HB 609 was the bill that went through the legislature that made it a crime. Was it a Class B misdemeanor for anyone of the federal government to try to enforce the law if they came to Missouri to try to enforce the law? And I think some states have I mean, this is model legislation. Some aspects of this legislation have been repeated in different states. I think other states have taken a little bit stronger stance than making it just a slap on the hand. Here in Missouri, it's a slap on the hand, and it does very little, which I think we objected to at the time, if I can remember having that conversation. But I think that's the tack that they're going to take with it. I think if you try to initiate a if the federal government tries to initiate a healthcare exchange here in Missouri, they're going to go after them legally.
Right. I think the other thing about HB 609 was actually a bill where the state tried to implement healthcare exchanges, and it failed because they were implementing a lot of the federal mandates. It was basically going to be a state version of the Obamacare healthcare exchange, or insurance exchanges. And so that was defeated, but now the legislature is once again, after the passage of Prop E, they're going to be addressing whether or not the state needs to go ahead and set those exchanges up to preempt. I think this is where they're going with it, to preempt the federal government from coming in and doing it. And what we want them to do is just go toe-to-toe, nose-to-nose with the federal government and say, no, you're just simply not implementing these exchanges. And Prop E was passed to prevent the governor from overriding the legislature and doing this, because up until this Prop E passed, the governor could have implemented the healthcare exchanges himself, which he tried to do in 2011. The Missouri Assembly caught on to it, exposed him. There was a huge groundswell, and he was stopped. But I think that what we want to do is communicate to the state legislature, to our senators, state senators, and of course our assembly, state assembly, our representatives, that we don't want these exchanges in Missouri. That we voted for Prop C, we voted for Prop E. Missourians have spoke in a very majority kind of way and said no to this type of government interference in our lives at the state or federal level. And what we want our state legislature to do is to stand up, stand on the 10th Amendment, and say, not in Missouri. You're not doing this. We are not going to allow it. We won't.
But here's the rub with Prop E, though. It does give the Missouri legislature the power to do it. Now, they can either initiate it with the vote of the people, or they can the state legislature can do it. So we're not out of the woods. I mean, some holding of the feet to the fire that has to take place here, and you need to contact your representatives and make sure that they know that you are not asleep at the wheel here.
Absolutely. Because that was one of the things I was really torn on Prop E, to be honest with you. But to preempt, because Nixon would have just implemented exchanges that looked just like Obamacare. And so with that in mind, I wasn't confident that the federal government, that our Congress and the Senate would repeal Obamacare, I thought, well, we don't want Nixon to do it, and so I thought we'll take our chances with the state assembly and try to preempt them if they try to do it. And that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. I put that grass fire alert out today, and all of the contact information is there for you to make phone calls and send emails to your legislators. I contacted Scott Roop's office today and got hung up on, so I called back and left a message. Make sure they hear you, folks. I'm not sure how well we're going to be received, and it's kind of early in the game. But folks, we absolutely need to make that contact.
Well, and I think the important thing here is that what they're doing right now is they're meeting to set their legislative agenda for next year. And if we can preempt this before they have something that they've cooked up in their minds and have on their agenda, then we'll have a much better chance of stopping this from happening and encouraging them to do what we've really sent them to Jefferson City to do, and that's to defend the liberty
right.
of Missouri citizens. And I want to remind everybody that right now we currently have a veto-proof state assembly. There is no reason for our state assembly to not stand up in defense of the Missouri citizens against an out-of-control federal government. There's no excuse.
Absolutely. And it's going to be, you know what, it's going to be fun. It's going to be entertaining to watch the General Assembly this session because, you know, we've had this Republican majority for quite a while, and they are always running around the Capitol saying, it's not my fault, it's not my fault, because we have a Democratic governor. Well, now, you know, they can't really say that anymore. And I don't know about you, but we all just came through this election season, and we listened to, you know, potentially elected campaign for our votes and our support, and I heard nothing coming from anybody. Maybe other parts of the state did, but I heard nothing coming from anybody about how they were thinking outside the box, how they were going to go to Jefferson City with a new idea to shrink government and, you know, to do things a little differently, to bring more state sovereignty issues into the legislature and to shrink government and to become, you know, a different mechanism, a different machine than they are now. You know, most of what I heard is that they're going to go, you know, I heard the usual Republican talking points, and they're going to go and it's going to be a lot of business as usual. Well, with this, none of us expected Obama to be elected, so we thought that things were going to be a little bit different on that front. And with this push coming from especially the grassroots to become more state sovereignty oriented and 10th Amendment, you know, they better be setting an agenda now to follow that lead. They better start listening to people. If they have, you know, I don't know if they've had their ear to the ground, if they've heard the grassroots, but this is the perfect time to start contacting your elected folks and let them know that another session of a business as usual and blaming the governor for everything is just not going to work. We, you know, we've never been more on fire. We've been on fire for 4 years with the Obama administration, and now we're getting ready to explode. The, you know, the fuse is near the powder keg, and it is getting ready to blow. And we cannot afford to do any more pointing of the fingers at this guy or that guy or the governor or whoever. You know, we got to start thinking outside the box and having a different mindset in Jefferson City. And if they're not going to do it, I mean, you know, if they're not going into this legislative session with that agenda, the grassroots has got to make them do it.
Absolutely. And I think another thing, too, Lisa, that I'd like to point out right now is that from where I'm sitting and what I see, we have a completely defunct federal government when it comes to doing their constitutional duty. They have stepped completely outside the purview of what they're allowed to do. According to the Constitution, and this is nothing new. I understand that. We all understand that. We get it. But the bottom line is that our last line of defense, the last check and balance in place in the Constitution that has not yet been usurped is states' rights. And it's going to be a tough battle, and there are going to have to be difficult decisions made within our states. And the only one that we can concentrate on is Missouri. That
right.
is our state. It's our assembly. It is up to the people of Missouri to get our legislators to do what we need them to do. And having a veto-proof assembly is definitely in our favor, because that pretty much makes Nixon kind of a lame duck for the next 4 years. And we need to take advantage of that to the largest degree that we can. And I truly believe in the 10th Amendment. I believe that the states do have power over the federal government, and it's time to exercise and flex those muscles, and it's time for the states to get off the government dole. The federal government is broke, and the solution to what is happening to our country is not, there is no top-down solution, not from where I'm mm-hmm. sitting, and I've been saying this for 4 years. You know I have, Lisa.
Yes, I do.
There is not a top-down solution. It has to be bottom-up. It has to be, we have to engage our local communities. We've got to get them to stop taking federal dollars. We've got to go to our city council meetings, and we've got to engage our state assembly to help protect us, and we've got to get them to stop
right.
taking the federal dollars. We need to keep our own money in Missouri and use it for us.
Yeah, and it's not like the federal government is going to give it back to us willingly, folks. I mean, we have willingly relinquished that power. You know, if we want it back, we're going to have to take it back. They're not going to just roll over and give it back to us. And we're going to have to, and that requires a General Assembly here in Missouri with a backbone, you know, strong enough to stand up and say, you know, hey, it's not business as usual, and we're going to strengthen those 10th Amendment rights all the way down the line. So, again, I want to urge you, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, take a look at that grass fire alert, and in the upper right-hand corner of the webpage, you can also sign up to get those grass fire alerts via cell phone. So immediately when they come out, you can get an alert. So sign up for grass fire alerts. It's a great little tool that we've put there for your availability and your ease, so to keep you updated on the very latest situations. We're going to be monitoring legislation all session and monitoring the goings on all of the important issues, and it's never been more crucial than it is now. So make sure you can stay up to date, current on those issues and get those alerts as they come out. So sign up for those grass fire alerts. Another thing kind of want to give you a little information on, my good friend Liz Trent at Spirit of Resistance made me aware of this last night. If you've been following the national news in Illinois, the dance of Jesse Jackson Jr. And his situation. They reelected Jesse Jackson Jr. over there in Illinois, and while he was in rehab, what a fiasco! My God, I'm so glad I don't live in Illinois. Anyway, Examiner.com reported today that Jesse Jackson Jr. checked out of the Mayo Clinic and disappeared to God knows where. Well, Spirit of Resistance had the scoop that Jesse Jackson Jr. checked out of the Mayo Clinic and hopped a plane to Istanbul, Turkey. So why is Jesse Jackson Jr. straight out of rehab on his way to Istanbul, Turkey? What a question. I mean, I can't even imagine. With all of the things that are going on over the Middle East, you know, that it's not contentious enough over there. Why are we sending Jesse Jackson Jr.? Why is he going over to Istanbul, Turkey? Go to spiritofresistance.blogspot.com and read about that. Jackson Jr. rushes over to Mr. Erdogan's Istanbul, Turkey, and read about what's going on there. I think they have the scoop on that issue and a lot of other good information about what's going on over there as well. We have a lot of stuff going on for you tonight, folks. We have a great show for you. We have Ray Cuneo again to give us an update on the Agenda 21 issues and to kind of connect the dots between Agenda 21 and more of Obama's policies. And we've also talked about a little bit in the past about, you know, and I know that you've heard the news stories about how the conservative demographic is dying off, and part of the reasons why Romney won the election is because we're losing our conservative demographic. Well, we've got a great interview coming up for you next here with Alex. Alex is a great kid that I met out on the campaign trail a few weeks ago. Great conservative-minded young guy. You know, just when you thought that the chips were down and we were, you know, headed into the darkness, it's really going to be the youth of America who are going to turn this thing around. And we're going to come back after this commercial break, and we're going to talk to Alex and hear his story about what it's like to be a conservative teenage kid and here in Missouri, and to hear about the problems that he's running up against in his local community trying to spread that conservative message. And we'll be right back.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
I've got a feeling that the tide is turning.
This life's so dear.
for peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Welcome back. You are listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We're here to help you find ways to take back your government that's slowly slipping, or not slowly, very quickly slipping away from you. And one of the most positive things that's happened in the last week or so is that, you know, maybe the future isn't so dark. There's some up and coming young people in the conservative movement who get it. You know, they certainly got it at a lot younger age than I came up with it from. And you know, when you stop and you talk to some of these young people, you kind of have hope for the future, that you know that it's not going to die out with you, because you start, you know, us old folks, we've been fighting this battle for quite a while. And we're a little bit battle weary, but we've got a whole new generation of young kids out there who have enthusiasm and respect for the Constitution and respect for liberty. They know what it means to care about liberty. Today we have with us a young man named Alex. We're not going to identify him any other way than by Alex. He is from the Mid-Missouri region. I ran into him on the campaign trail at a campaign event when we were all out promoting candidates and issues, and got to talking to him a little bit. He was at this event with some friends of his, and it was great. For the first thing, it was great to see some young people at this event, because, you know, most of us, you know, are of a certain age out there walking and doing the boots on the ground thing. And it was great to see that there are young people who are interested and engaged in promoting liberty and promoting candidates and issues that promote liberty, and who actually have stopped to take the time to learn about what that really means and to have a good understanding of it. And as I talked to Alex for a while, you know, I found out that, you know, while the row is not easy for the rest of us to hoe in trying to, you know, change hearts and minds of folks who may be going down a path that doesn't lead to liberty, Alex is also experiencing some of those things in his world, and he's experiencing some challenges in trying to educate the folks around him about the freedoms that he's trying to preserve and protect in his work. So we want to welcome him tonight. Thanks for being with us here on Culture Vigilante tonight, Alex.
Hey, thanks for having me, Lisa.
Alex, you are a remarkable young man. I mean, you probably know and are engaged much more than in the Patriot movement than most kids your age, I would say. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay, and you're a high school student.
Yes, I attend a high school. I'm a junior in high school. I think my grades are pretty okay, but that might just be an opinion. And I recently got the idea to start a teenage Republicans club at my high school. TARS is what that would be short for, or something like Young Americans for Freedom. There's a lot of groups out there that are centered for college students, but not that many for high school students, and I wanted to start one at my school. And I ran into a little bit of trouble, and I should have seen it coming. The majority of the teachers at my school tend to be leftists, to be liberals. And for any club that you have to start at a school, you have to have a teacher sponsor. And as I started to ask around teachers, I got a lot of no's, and I got a lot of awkward no's, and a lot of heck no's. But I did find a few, I would say five conservative teachers in my school,
mm-hmm.
that were going to vote for Romney. They're going to support the conservative movement, but they would not sponsor this club.
So they wouldn't stick their neck out. Is that, were they worried about maybe, you know, the repercussions of how they would be viewed in the workplace, or
I found that I went and I talked to someone that is an administrator at the school about this. And as I was talking to him, it got a little bit awkward as my eyes drifted from him to the shelves behind him and then met the gaze of a large portrait of Barack Obama. So there are administrators in the school that are liberals, and these conservative teachers, I think that they may just be too nervous of the fallout that may hit them within their workplace society, I would say.
Oh, so I mean, it's kind of like the Hollywood thing. So even if you can find a conservative teacher who agrees with your viewpoints, they're not going to stick their neck out for you because the administration generally, and this is not anything new. We know this about public education, that it's full of liberal-minded educrats who, you know, toe the leftist line in school. Let me ask you this, I don't want to veer off too far off your story, but you know, in your classwork, how much of a liberal message do you think that you receive just in your daily curriculum? Do you think there's much there?
I would say there is a lot, and I'm only taking one social studies course at this moment, and there's definitely some liberal spin there, but I would say that in other classes, especially with the big election as it was happening and now that it's happened, that say just in regular classes, there have been a lot of political statements that are incredibly out of place, but the teachers have been sure to find about it. In my Shakespeare class, for example, my teacher decided that it would be oh so important to talk about how she's voting for Barack Obama and why. And it was interesting because I don't think that modern politics and Shakespeare have much to do with each other.
Yeah, interesting that they would cross that line. Well, let me ask you this. Are you, as far as getting an interest in kids who wanted to join that club, how what's the temperature like there? Are there many kids who would be interested in following you in that direction?
Well, the problem is you have a whole populace of school that is being taught by mainly liberals participating in the teaching, and it's difficult to find kids that know for a fact that their views are conservative. You have young voters, and most young voters will either vote the way that their parents want to, or try to go in it open-minded. And then you have a lot of kids that are starting to get turned into politics with their social studies classes and their government courses, and they are trying to approach it with that mindset also. The problem is you have the teachers that are teaching from a leftist slant and that are influencing the more open-minded individuals into probably approaching the left with a more open-minded view. And it's difficult to find anyone that are so firm in their conservative beliefs that they're willing to even show up at a club to where they know that there may be some type of social repercussions.
Are you seeing anybody who's trying to at least give a little bit of balance?
I would say I have one teacher that he likes to play, quote, the devil's advocate a lot, but the devil's advocate is usually against Republicans. But I think sometimes he tries, but there's just so many teachers out there that if they ever make any type of political or social comment, it's for the left. And it's very, very worrisome, I would say, to think that in the Constitution, we have to guarantee liberty to America and her posterity, our future generations. And with the teachers out there like this, it scares me to think that when I'm an adult, when I'm able to participate in politics, what the government and what America will look like. And that's why it's so incredibly important for right now, grassroots groups like this need to get out there, and we need to start with the youth.
Absolutely.
I have a sign in my room that says, Young Americans for Romney. And I know that he did not get the youth vote that well. And you know what? He needed that to win, and unfortunately, I don't think that they focused in on that enough, and that should be our starting point for the next 4 years.
Well, Alex, tell me, I mean, you're very well-spoken and very articulate and obviously very knowledgeable about this. How did you get to this place? Were you influenced by your parents? Did you do your own research? How did you get here?
I would say that it started when I got my license. I was turned 16 last year. It was all great. And then as I started to drive home after school every day, I'd catch the end of a talk show, and it was just a weird, crazy lady. And I didn't really know much. And then the heat of the Trayvon Martin case started to come about. And then she would use words like these progressives, these liberals. And then she would go into little rants about them and about how negative they are. And then I thought, well, you know, these people don't sound like they're going to be creating an America that I would want to be a part of for my future, so I should probably step in. And that lady ended up being Dana Lash. So then over the summer, I started participating with campaigns, and I started a Twitter and a blog and trying to get the word out through new media, doing radio shows like this. And then I started attending parties and rallies, and it's just really – it's really been a fun ride, and I'm glad it's not over for me.
So you were not able to vote in this election, but – I know I met you out on the campaign trail. Were you involved in any campaigns, any working for any candidates or any issues?
I did work with the Todd Akin campaign a bit, making some phone calls and then doing some sign drops. And it was fun to see how the campaign process worked and how – and just to – it was a very big learning experience for me. And it's been really great. I did donate to Romney's campaign, of course, but could never really make it out to any of his events because who drops by Missouri nowadays? I mean, come on.
Yeah, we were considered pretty much a red state for Romney, so there wasn't a lot of interest for him to spend much time here. Mm-hmm. So tell me, Alex, do you have future aspirations to go into politics? Do you have you made any decisions about where your interests might lie for college or?
Well, I'm still only a junior, but that means that I now have to start thinking about college and that it's now a necessity for me to start thinking about college, and it's a little daunting. But I've started to think about what my major would be, and I would major maybe in economics or maybe political science, but I don't know if I could survive those liberal academia classes for political science, and maybe even communications because I love new media and I like getting the word out there. And then I'm even tossing around the idea of journalism because the media as it is right now is just a mess.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, we can all attest to that. And I actually might recruit you to help me with my Twitter account. It's a mess, too. So where does it stand now with your conservative club in your high school? Are you still trying to get it rolling?
It's been frozen, I would say, that the ball has just stopped moving, and it's going to take a big push to get it going again. And I'm probably going to have to get to one of those teachers and then just plead with them to please sponsor this group so that we can help my future by getting these other kids to learn about the issues. Just come in with an open mind and then learn about all of the issues that are going on, all of the shortfallings of the Obama administration and then liberal theology and its danger to America. And just by doing this, we can almost guarantee that the future for America will be bright.
Absolutely. So how many kids do you think might be interested in joining your club if you can get it to roll?
I'm hoping at around 20. That would be the number that I'm shooting for.
That'd be a good start. And your parents, they're supportive of your efforts here?
They love it. They've never been very heavy into politics like I am, but so they like to sit on the sidelines and kind of just watch me go, and they learn about the issues by asking me. Or then I started my dad on Twitter a couple months ago, and he'll show me an article and be like, well, Dad, I know the person that wrote that article. And then he'll just kind of just walk away all depressed that I knew something before him.
Well, you go, Alex. You're a dynamic young man. I hope that you'll come back and give us an update on your progress and let us know about the things that you've got going. We'd really like to find out how your encounters work out at your high school. Hopefully, we're hoping you'll be successful in getting your club started, but we'd like to know either way. So I hope you'll come back and let us know.
All right. I certainly will.
Well, thank you for being with us today, Alex. And we're looking forward to talking to you soon, and we wish you much luck. And your parents did a great job raising you, kid. You got a lot on the ball. So,
All right. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Alex. Okay, we'll be back. We're going to take another short break, and then we're going to come back with our interview with Ray Cuneo.
I'm telling you why.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. please help us with this very small charitable project.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We're back. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is Lisa Payne Nager, and you are listening to the Culture Vigilante Hour on Wednesday evenings. We're here every Wednesday. We're here with Cindy McGee and Dave Court. We just had a great interview with a young man named Alex, who is the future of the conservative movement. We hope to have him back. He's trying very hard to establish some conservative organizations in his area with the young people there, and he's meeting with a little resistance. Who could, you know, go figure, you know, in the public education system, but maybe with a little help and a little encouragement, he can prevail. So we'll be glad to have him back soon. Cindy, I mean, does that, any of that surprise you?
I'll tell you, I hope he's the future of America.
He's a dynamo. Yeah,
he is. And we need young people like him. You know, some of us kind of jokingly in the conservative patriot uprising in the state of Missouri, we're kind of dinosaurs. It's kind of like we need to reach our youth. It's so critically important. And that is going to be another focus that Show Me Patriots is going to be really zeroing in and laser focusing on, our education system and the incredible problems that we have with it, and trying to fix what's happening here in Missouri. And because Alex is right, our kids in the public education system are being indoctrinated
mm-hmm.
to be good little socialists. Mm-hmm.
And it's
that's
the reason that we're in the position.
Very long time.
Yes, absolutely. It's the reason we're in the position we're in, is because the education system has had them for so many generations. And, you know, that mindset has just been solidified over generations. So it's not gonna change overnight, but it's a good thing to see that not everybody's drinking the Kool-Aid, and you know, kids like Alex, they bring a ray of sunshine into a very dark situation at the moment.
Real breath of fresh air.
Absolutely. And we are going to move on. We have been for the last many weeks talking to Ray Cuneo. Ray Cuneo is just a genius on the Agenda 21 issue, and you know, he has skillfully and knowledgeably connected the dots between what Agenda 21 is on a national and local level for us, and how we can see the workings of it playing out with the Obama administration's agenda. And we have yet another interview with Ray talking about just that very thing, and connecting more dots with the executive orders and all of the issues through Agenda 21 and fundamentally changing America through Barack Obama. So let's take a listen to that interview right now. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and we are here again with Ray Cuneo. He's here this week to talk to us about the post-election Agenda 21 tie-in to the Obama, next 4 years, the Obama administration, and what kind of consequences this election has for us all as it relates to Agenda 21. Thanks for being with us, Ray.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Lisa. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad we're still here. We'll see how long we're here for now that we have Obama for 4 more years. It just affects so many things. And you and I were talking a little earlier about the agenda of Barack Obama and how this progressive movement's going to move forward under his next 4 years. And this Agenda 21 situation is right at the heart of all of it.
Well, that's absolutely is. I mean, you know, as we've said in some of your other segments, that you know, this Agenda 21 is a massive agenda to change society and the culture of the United States and, in fact, the world. But we're focused on the United States now. You know, here we are, post election, and we're faced with another 4 years. We've seen the first 4 years, and of course, I've been in this battle long enough. I remember the Clinton years. And what he did to push Agenda 21, sustainable development, along. Through the Bush years, nothing really happened, although Agenda 21 by that time was thoroughly embedded in all the federal agencies. Then along comes Obama and his first 4 years. And, of course, we all have heard his famous saying that he said numerous times, you know, his goal is to fundamentally transform America, fundamentally transform America. And he's taken substantial measures in his first 4 years to do that through a whole host of executive orders and other things. But I can only, it makes me shudder to think of the next 4 years, what's coming up in terms of executive orders. And I keep coming back to executive orders because I don't mean to say that he really doesn't care what Congress does, but by and large, I really believe that. You know, yeah, he would like Congress to go along with him, makes him look more palatable to the American people, and we're getting along as long as Congress goes along with his agenda. However, having said that, by and large, he just very much takes the will take the approach that, look, if I can't get it through Congress, I'm just going to executive order the thing in, whatever issue he is. He's focused on.
Right, and we've seen that. So, yes. So as far as executive orders go in Agenda 21, I mean, we're going to see. We're going to see just a light speed movement toward more regulation, more issues concerning property rights, more issues with this wildlands project that we've been discussing the last couple of weeks.
Right.
I mean, the whole thing for Agenda 21 is one world government, and we're moving much closer to that. Are there any financial ramifications with Agenda 21? Because we're headed toward the fiscal cliff at the end of the year.
Well, I think, and this, you know, I can't. There's a lot of things that dots that can be connected as it relates to the financial, and I really believe that there is an agenda to take the United States down. I've always said for a one world government to happen, two things must happen in the United States. We must tear up the U.S. Constitution, and pretty much that's been done. There's a lot of research and history to that effect. And, of course, the other thing is to destroy the U.S. economy. And I think that's what's at play right now. And a lot of people can say, well, how does that tie in? Well, the fact is, if we go over the cliff and we hit the bottom on the financial end of things, it's going to so negatively impact the United States, every one of us, to the point it's going to domino throughout our economy, throughout our society, throughout our culture. And not only that, it's going to take down so many of the other Western countries, too, that are tied to us. So my speculation, my belief is that once you reach that point, then government's going to say, look, it is time that government, meaning that maybe we need to take a serious look at trying to get some coalition here or some kind of effort towards a one-world government to make sure this doesn't happen again so that we can get a grasp on our currencies as a world currency as opposed to a U.S.-denominated dollar. A world reserve currency. So again, there's dots there. There's a lot of circumstantial evidence. But so you know, that to me is going to tie the economy is what's really going to be the final straw that breaks the camel's back, and that's going to be the final thrust that is going to bring everybody to the altar of a one world government. Now, looking at specifically at the Obama administration executive orders as it relates to Agenda 21, and of course these tie into economic issues too. Back in June 9th of 2011, Executive Order 13575 issued. It's called the Executive, it establishes the White House Council Rural Council, the White House Rural Council. It has 25 executive departments are represented, including Treasury and Justice. Now, this is Rural Council, so you've got Treasury and Justice out here, and Defense. Department of Defense is also involved, which I find quite scary, is that they're coming to rural America to, well, to quote them in a press release, the White House Rural Council will coordinate programs across government to encourage public-private partnerships to promote economic prosperity and quality of life in rural communities nationwide. To me, that's no more than a facade for saying, look, the federal government is going to take over rural America, and of course one of their main goals is going to be the Wildlands Project, which we've discussed before. Another executive order was issued on May 1st, 2012, Executive Order 13609. This is particularly scary. And basically, to paraphrase what it's about here is, it's dictating that government must enforce, meaning the U.S. government must enforce coordination of international UN policy.
Oh my God!
It doesn't say UN international policy, but that's the implication. It just says coordinate international policy. Now, I find that quite interesting in the fact that here's an executive order issued by the President of the United States, which carries the force of law. And I want to emphasize that all these executive orders carry the full force of law, just like statutory law or case law. So you have an executive order here that is, in essence, bypassing the, if you will, the whole treaty as a scenario as established by the Constitution. In other words, treaties are supposed to signed by the President and ratified by the Senate. Well, this whole thing, and this is just typical of how Clinton particularly and also Obama is just sidestepping all of the involvement, if you will, of Congress. And so in essence, what Obama has said by this executive order is that he doesn't really care what Congress is going to do on implementing UN policy or any international policy. He's just going to go ahead and has issued this executive order and saying that we, the United States, will implement this. So it's just like a constitutional monarch. He's just saying, hey, I'm going to do it. To heck with Congress. Then on May 15th of 2012, he issued an executive order called the White House Council on Strong Cities and Strong Communities. Now, that top growth, new urbanism, all the things that we've discussed before relating to the shove them in, stack them up, high-density movement involved in smart growth. Then on May 16th, he issued another executive order, that was this year, May 16th, called the National Defense Resource Preparedness. That's it. And in essence, I think bottom line, what me the, my interpretation of this is that it's supposed to be addressing the issue of being prepared for terrorist attacks, but it's international from external sources or from domestic. So it's whatever government wants to say is a domestic or international terrorist attack, whatever they want to define.
So an uprising from the Patriots could be that.
There is that it bottom line, it to me, it lays the groundwork for martial law.
Right. So an uprising from the Patriot movement, I mean, you know, any of us could be considered terrorists because we are working against the Obama administration.
Absolutely, and I think that is really something that that people need to really be concerned about. It's not going to keep me from speaking out, but I will tell you, don't be surprised if this administration doesn't start playing fast and loose with their interpretation of domestic terrorism.
What executive order number was that, Ray?
You know, I didn't have it in front of me. It's called the National Defense Resource Preparedness.
Okay.
It was issued on May 16, 2012. I'm sorry I didn't have the number in front of me.
That's all right. I'll find it.
I'm trying to keep a lot of these in my head, and I can't keep them all there. But any rate, but you read through that, and what's so frightening, it absolutely delineates all of the economy and the society, I should say the economy, and each of these cabinet officers, what their responsibility is. And it's specifically, well, I zeroed in on one regarding agriculture. And it specifically says that the Secretary of Agriculture, Vilsack, can, based on this executive order, he can, at his discretion, basically confiscate all of any and take over all of agriculture, if you will. It specifically in the executive order talks about livestock, farm equipment, and produce.
So really, if
so,
they can control the food
yeah.
supply, they can pretty much control everything.
Absolutely. And I think I get so frustrated with the media and even Fox News, which is the only one that, you know, really tries to cover any of this. I've given up on, not that I ever had any confidence in them anyway, but, I mean, the rest of the media, just except for programs like yourself or talk radio and stuff like that, is pretty much just, you know, part of the government mouthpiece. But I get so frustrated because so much of this country, and I just mentioned a few executive orders here. This is not, by any stretch of the imagination, all of the executive orders that are impacting the United States right now. I only mentioned the ones that I really picked out that kind of zero in on Agenda 21. But my point is that the media, the so-called mainstream media, and even Fox, doesn't get into these executive orders. They talk about what the issues are. Well, what's Congress and the president fighting about today? You know, is it immigration, or is it tax reform, blah, 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 blah. Well, those are all good issues and appropriate issues, but the fact of the matter is our country is being run by executive order. If, again, it's to be redundant here, if Congress or if the president cannot get Congress to do what he wants, well, I'll just there was a
yeah.
famous – I say a famous quote, see if I can paraphrase it here. 1997, Clinton advisor Paul Begala, and he's still on some of the talk programs. He was a senior advisor to Clinton, and they issued an executive order. And his quote was, and I think I've got it pretty close here, executive orders, law of the land, kind of cool. Executive order, law of the land, kind of cool. And I think that says it all, because the Clinton administration was flaunting the fact that, boy, we're just moving forward, whether Congress wants to go along with us or not, we're moving forward with executive orders. And the Obama administration has been doing the same thing and will, I think, you know, in the next 4 years, I mean, I can't even fathom what he's going to do, because there's nothing that has been said that leads me to believe that he has said, or anybody trying to interpret what this next four-year administration of Obama is going to bring, not convince me that he has changed his stripes at all.
And
in fact, I think the stripes are going to get more pronounced.
Right.
I think he is dedicated to his ideology, and he's going to go full force in policy to get that done.
And that seems to be where how he's going to get it done. I mean, this whole Agenda 21, it's not hard to connect the dots between the line items in Agenda 21 and the executive orders that Obama has in the past and will in the future continue to spew out of his administration. And, you know, the Fairness Act is something that I've been kind of concerned about, because we have this patriot movement. We have, you know, Missouri Grassroots does internet radio. There are a lot of conservative talk show radios across the country and in Missouri as well. And I was wondering, do you know, Ray, are there any issues that we need to be aware of that could come forth from I mean, we already know that Obama will probably go after the Fairness Act and try to push that through. But is there anything in Agenda 21 that would try to quash freedom of speech?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess I could probably, you know, I'm trying to think anything that I could really put my finger on that specific says freedom of speech. I don't think, but I'm that there's anything that I remember in those 300 pages. But I'm sure you can find where that, public-private partnership. Let me just focus on that for a minute. Public-private partnership. What does that mean? That's flaunted a lot during Agenda 21. Public-private partnership doesn't mean you and I as individuals in the government and our relationship as established under the Constitution, individuals versus their government, and government by the people. What it means is government and non-governmental organizations or corporations. And I always use the example of General Electric. I mean, right there, General Electric is in the pocket. It's a public-private partnership between the federal government. Look what they did with the light bulb issue. Now, the government got what they wanted there, control of the light bulb manufacturing, and, of course, GE got the exclusive rights to make it. So that's a public-private partnership.
So we'll have to be sanctioned by the government. It will only be able to operate under what's sanctioned by the government. So anything that
that's
they can put under public-private partnerships.
That comes back to your issue of the Fairness Act, where and we already see the mainstream media. For God's sake, the government just will come out and call them, the federal government media or TASS
right.
Just
like Pravda in the Soviet Union.
Right. And what it is. And I think you're going to see more and more pressure brought on by this administration to squelch free speech through the media. And I get so upset because so many people defend free speech in the media, which they should, which is all well and good. But so many people ignore, and the media ignores, the importance of the Second Amendment, our property rights and things of that nature. I guarantee you, if the Second Amendment goes, or our property rights goes, it's not going to be long to where there will be no more free speech.
Right, it'll be gone.
What is sanctioned by government.
Right. Well, this is absolutely something that we need to dig into further, and it's not going to go away anytime soon, folks. We have 4 more years of Obama, and it is so easy to connect the dots between all of the Agenda 21 issues and all of the policies coming out of the Obama administration, past, present, and future. Just be on the lookout. There's more reason than ever to contact your legislators to urge them to get out of the United Nations. Nothing good is coming out of the United Nations for the United States of America. It's just not. It's going to be the end of us. And President Obama is helping it along.
Again, to remind your visitors or your listeners that as I said, Obama wants to transform America. But remember what Al Gore said regarding Agenda 21. He looked at it as a wrenching transformation of society. So I don't care whether it's free speech. Oh, I do care. But, I mean, regardless of what the issue is, free speech, the economy, any other social or economic issue, it's all involved in Agenda 21. Everything is touched by Agenda 21 and the goals that are established by that. Nobody can escape those, regardless of where you live. And, in fact, maybe in a future segment we can talk more about what is happening in the urban areas, because right now a lot of city mayors, major city mayors, are supporting new building codes and building requirements. I forget what they call it, green building codes, which, for example, is going to have like apartments that are going to have 300 to 400 square feet maximum.
Wow.
And, of course, this is happening right now. I think Bloomberg has come out in New York and, I don't know, L.A. and San Francisco, and a lot of them are falling in line now. And that's part of what we had discussed before about this high-density stack-em-up is that all of a sudden you're going to push people in, and there's a whole host of ways they can do that over a period of decades, and push them into these little cubicles for living space.
Okay. All right, let's take up with that next time, Ray. Thanks for being with us this week, and thanks for helping us kind of get a bird's eye view of what we can expect from the Obama administration in the next 4 years, and more reasons to pay attention to this situation, folks, because it's not going away, and it's only going to get strengthened under President Obama. So more important than ever to get in touch with your elected representation, because you just can't. You can't sit on this for 4 more years. This is just not, it's not going to go in our favor.
No, and I think it's going to come down to a fight. I really believe this. If there's going to be a fight, I say a fight, a battle against the federal government by the states' rights issues and local government.
Yeah. States are absolutely going to have to start pushing for their sovereignty that we so willingly gave up so long ago. Okay, Ray Cuneo, Agenda 21, thank you. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week, Ray.
You bet. Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks, Ray. Bye. Bye. Okay. Again, wonderful information from Ray Cuneo. We've had a series of great interviews with Ray over the last several weeks, and I'll go ahead and repost the links of those or you can go to the Missouri Grassroots Coalition radio page and go to Culture Vigilante and look at all of the radio links there and get caught up. If you've missed any of those great interviews with Ray Cuneo, go back to those because all of our podcasts here on Missouri Grassroots Radio are podcasted in perpetuity for you to go back and listen to and maintain that information base. Want to also remind the folks, you good folks out there, you good Missouri patriots out there, that we are so close to reaching our goal for the Secret Santa. We are almost there, and Christmas is right around the corner, and we are just a hair's breadth away from of reaching our goal of $500. We're hoping to help about 4 Missouri families this year, put it over the top so that, you know, if they're struggling to bring Christmas to their kids, we're going to go and pay off the layaway accounts. We're going to pick a few department stores across the state and pick families who need a little help just getting by this Christmas so that their kids won't be disappointed on Christmas morning. So go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. We have a Secret Santa tab there. You can donate just a few dollars. We just need a few dollars from a few people to reach our goal. We're trying to raise $500, and we're so close. You can pay by PayPal, check, or money order. And it's a great way to give a little charity this holiday season. We're not asking for much. You know, with the Obama administration trying to create a socialist society, charity is going to be a thing of the past pretty soon. So do what you can to fight off socialism and give to Missouri Grassroots Coalition Secret Santa. Every cent that's donated goes to the cause. Doesn't go to anything else. Just goes straight to helping those families. So please go to that page and help us out if you have an opportunity. And again, if you have not signed up to get grass fire alerts, it's right there on the front page of our webpage. Get your grass fire alerts going there. And next week we'll have a great show for you, which is in the works, so I can't tell you about it right now, but we've got some things gelling out there, more about your rights and freedoms and how you can help that along. Tomorrow night, Kevin Harnett, Hillbilly Logic, will be with us. And Kevin does a great 2-hour show on Thursdays, every Thursday here at Missouri Grassroots Radio. Friday night, we'll have the Missouri Grassroots Roundtable. A group of us will be here again hashing out the events of the week and the agenda items to come, hopefully in the Missouri Legislature on Monday night. Dave Court, you heard him here earlier, Mr. Hour of Truth. We'll have a great show for you. And we'll be back here again on Wednesday nights, as we always are, your Culture Vigilante Hour, helping you get informed and engaged to help you be able to take back your government here, which we're going to be busy here for the next 4 years, folks, taking back our government. We need all the help we can get. So join us again next week. Join us again on the other nights for Missouri Grassroots programming. Go to the webpage. Join Missouri Grassroots Coalition if you have not done so. Get those grass fire alerts.
and donate to Secret Santa. Join us on Facebook and Twitter as well. And keep in touch with us. And until then, we will talk to you here again next week. Thanks for being with us.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.
Mom!